What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
The SB Nation NFL show is on the clock, and we've got some more great draft coverage here for you. I am Michael Kist, and today I am joined by a very special guest, someone I've known for a long time, unfortunately. He is Arif Hasan of The Athletic Minnesota. Arif, how you doing, bud? Long time no see.
I'm good. The loathing is mutual, honestly.
Wait, I really missed you at Mobile this year. You're going next year, right? So we can,
yeah, obviously.
We can get together. Okay.
For sure.
All right, because... All right, or we're gonna create one of those the fighting in the cartoons with the smoke and there's limbs that coming out of it everywhere. And
oh yeah,
like that.
No, absolutely. We'll be like a moving ball of dust and limbs, and we're gonna like fly off a cliff and not realize that we've fought each other off of a cliff for like 4 or 5 seconds and then fall to our deaths.
So if you want to see two idiots kill each other over draft takes, make sure you get your media passes for the Senior Bowl next year, and you come and join us. But Arif, first off, tell the gentle listeners who you are, who you write for, what you do, and whatnot. Let them know.
Yeah, I'm just some idiot who hates Julian Edelman. I cover the Vikings for The Athletic. You can find me on Twitter at Arif Hasan NFL. I read about the draft from an NFL level, not just a Vikings level, every year. So, I put together the consensus big board. I put together a bunch of data regarding like workouts and stuff like that. When I'm not, putting out everyone else's bad draft, I don't have to put out my own draft takes, thankfully. But when I steal everyone else's draft picks, when I'm not doing that, I cover the Vikings.
It's such a grift, and I think it's genius.
Yeah,
yeah. You're number one. You're aggregating content in a unique way. When we talk about this consensus big board, basically what Arif is doing is asking all of his friends in the media industry and people out there, hey, send me your big board so I can kill you for it 3 to 4 years down the line. People willingly do this, by the way. And subject themselves to this as some sort of like pride thing. So Arif takes all of these and he creates this consensus big board. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you about today. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some possible steals outside of the top 100 based on the workouts. You just published that piece for The Athletic. Also, we'll get into some Viking stuff. I want your takes on what they could possibly do in the NFL draft. But going back to your grift of a big board project here, essentially break down maybe at a more granular level than I did, and maybe some takeaways that you had from it last year that can kind of set up to what we're going to talk about this year.
It's usually about 60 or so boards from around the media landscape that goes all the way up to like, ESPN, Todd McShay, Mel Kiper, down to a bunch of like enthusiast blogs about the draft, people that when it's not draft season might get like 5 or 6 visits to the draft page, a month. Try to get
so like me 4 years ago, something
yeah,
like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean you now, honestly. But
tremendous. But, keep going.
Yeah. I've got about 60 big boards. I combine them to create a 300 player big board, and it's not just that I get all of this like nice data about kind of what the consensus is, right? About like, who ranks 5th by consensus or whatever. I can also figure out kind of which players are the most volatile in a draft. I think that that's like really interesting, like which players are the most polarizing. I found that there's like 2 categories of big boards. There's people who, put together their big boards and they all seem to kind of follow a very similar pattern. And that's because they've got sources within the NFL and the NFL is thinking, in a particular direction about a player. They've got access to medicals or they know a lot more about the off field. And so those big boards will look pretty similar. And then you've got people who really their only access is you know, evaluating based off of film and then listening to media reports, and that gets you what I call like an evaluator board, people that are really just, you know, trying to figure out who ranks what based just on on-field play, film statistics, etc. And the differences between the two of those, you know, I talk about that too. I try and find out kind of which positions have the most depth in the draft, which positions, you know, generate the most value. There's a lot of data that you can generate from having an aggregation of like 60 different big boards. And right now, you know, I haven't published it yet, but for 2021, I've got, I think I can check right now, I think I've got about 40 boards. Yeah, I've got 39 boards put into the database right now.
And you'll never take mine alive as much as you try to beg for my draft board. Oh, well, I'm not doing one this year, but I can send you a fake one. Really, be a tendency breaker, right? In the at least that's what they call it. Looking at like last year, I just to kind of set up what we talk about this year, with last year, like, where was the NFL like really different from where this big board consensus kind of landed? Who was taken like maybe way earlier or way later?
Yeah, I think a really good example that got a little bit of publicity among draft enthusiasts last year was Tyler Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
The Blogger Boys had him like 98th overall, just inside the top 100. But the people that do the forecasters that I mentioned, the people that have access to sources within the NFL, they ranked him 148th. Or 142nd, sorry. And he went 146th, or not 140, he went actually later. He went 161st overall. So they got really close to nailing him. And even then, they turned out were higher on him than the rest of the NFL. We'll kind of see, obviously, he was behind, you know, some fairly elite receivers. So we don't know kind of who ends up kind of right on that equation. But you talk to people covering the Bucs, and it sounds like Tyler Johnson is a fairly good player and was actually outsnapping Scotty Miller early in camp. So, I mean, that one's kind of curious. The NFL was lower on Christian Fulton than the big board was. And that one is kind of interesting. I think that one's pretty easy to explain. He did a bunch of things all right. He didn't do anything like particularly elite. And sometimes the NFL just wants you to do one thing really well. But yeah, I mean, this happens kind of across the board. One thing that I think the evaluators got super right is Willie Gay. They had him way higher than the forecasters did. So the evaluators had him 90th. The forecasters had him 137th. And it turns out the NFL had him even higher. The Kansas City Chiefs took him 63rd overall, and he was kind of low key one of the best line. He was better than Patrick Queen. You know, he was one of the better linebackers from the rookie class. So a lot of players here where the NFL was kind of lower or higher on, and you know some of the bears that typically I find out when. The NFL is substantially different than the consensus on a player. The consensus is kind of right half the time. The NFL is right half the time. So there's something to be said about kind of the wisdom of the crowds and not just that the NFL has access to all of this like unique data and that they're always right about these things.
It's interesting that two of the three examples that you gave, we'll take Christian Fulton out of it, but Willie Gay, Tyler Johnson, there was a lot of documented and undocumented character concern,
right?
Smoke around those players. So I can imagine that's really where like you could see the difference between how the NFL is viewing it and how the people prognosticating on the other side of it are seeing it. When you look at it this year, I'm gonna give you an example, and I really wonder how they differ on this. Mac Jones, quarterback, Alabama. How is we'll call them big draft, are they so much different from each other from the other evaluators when it comes to him? I feel like, including buddies of mine, are going to have like a second or third round grade on him when maybe some more people in the know would be quicker to put him in the first. Is my instinct right on that?
Yeah. So by consensus, he's the 20th overall player. Okay. It won't shock you that he's, I think, maybe the most polarizing player in the top 40.
Yeah, that's why I bring him up.
Yeah. And then the other ones are super easy to understand. Like Landon Dickerson, I think, is the second most polarizing player. And it's like, yeah, I mean, he got hurt right before. Like, that's just an injury concern, and we have no idea. We don't have access to his medicals, and so people kind of put him all over the board, and you don't know if he can play guard. But Mac Jones, you know, there's no injury concerns. It's just a question of the kind of football that you think might matter in the modern NFL and whether or not his supporting cast matters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There are some people that have him, you know, kind of completely out of the first two, even three rounds. We've got a board here that has him 80th. There's another board that has him 64th. Mm-hmm. I also have a board that has him first overall above Trevor Lawrence, right? It's kind of wild. The average, you know, that 20th overall, that kind of almost no one has him there, right? Like, there's a bunch of people that have him like 11th and 9th, and a bunch of people that are like, you know, screw this guy, he's 40th, right? So, let's see, the fine folks of the Draft Network, their group board has him 66th, and then one of their guys, Kyle Krabs, has him 80th. In his most recent board. Like, that's a pretty substantial difference. And then if you want to take a look at kind of the difference between some media boards and how the bigger media or like the forecasters have them from the evaluators, that's actually a smaller difference than I thought. The forecasters have them 19th, but some evaluators have them 21st. Like, some of these guys, like I said, have them really high. They like really like you know, the fact that he makes decisions quickly and that he's relatively pretty accurate. There's another board here that has no media connections at all that has him 8th, and another one has him 9th. So
yeah,
that one is a fascinating one.
When we look at like the top of the draft and like maybe like the top 50-ish or whatever you mentioned, you know, this can kind of suss out what people think are has the most depth, where maybe it's weaker. How does that kind of shake out? Where is a lot of the value in this draft according to these boards?
Yeah, it won't shock you that receiver is an area where there's a ton of depth this year, and that's been true for the past 4 years. In fact, I'm thinking I'm going to write a piece on that, just because the amount of receivers we have ranked between 50 and 75th, which I think is a decent kind of gauge for how much depth you have. Mm. The past 3 years, there was a ton of them, and then if you take a look at the boards from before 2021? Before 2016, there just aren't as many receivers, aside from 2014, there just aren't many receivers between 50 and 75. So that's not shocking that you'll find a bunch of receivers in that area where you can find, you know, second and third round guys. What I was kind of surprised by, I was always under the impression that this was a fairly top-heavy edge group, and I'm still kind of convinced it is. But there are a ton of edge players that are just kind of outside the top 32. So it seems like the second round you can find a couple more edge defenders than I originally thought kind of heading into the project. But, you know, people are really high on Joe Tryon. People are really high on Carlos Basham. People are pretty high on Peyton Turner. And so it turns out those guys can kind of round out that group, where if you don't find somebody in the first round, if you've got a reasonably good second round pick, which, you know, the Vikings don't have, you can find an edge defender. And then cornerback is a group that I think has a fair amount of depth based off of this work as well. So, yeah, if you want to tackle, probably get that guy early in the top 40. But, you know, cornerback, wide receiver, and even edge defender, you might be able to find second, possibly even the third round.
With edge defender, though, is there really anybody in the top 10? Like, is there somebody that everyone thinks is like not everyone.
Absolutely not. No one agrees on who the top edge defender is. there are some people. I've got like Azeez Ojulari is edge one for a couple of people. And I mean, he's a real football guy's kind of edge defender, where it's like, yeah, he reads the play the right way. He sets the run. But if you love crunching numbers, if you're a big old nerd, you don't like this dude, right? Because he weighed in pretty small. He didn't have a phenomenal pro day. His production is kind of whatever. It's not bad, but it's not like great. It's not, you know, 15 and a half sacks or whatever. So, you know, he reads plays really well and he plays really tough. And so some people have him pretty high. I've got, you know, one person has him inside their top 10. I've got a couple of people that have him inside the top 15, like a 12. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of Kwity Paye. Obviously, I think the legend of the 6'3", 7-second three cone has swayed a lot of people, me included. Jalen Phillips is a lot of people's edge one. That one's probably the most interesting case, because we just kind of have no idea, you know, with his medicals, kind of what the issue is there, whether or not, you know, he truly loves the game.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. And people have kind of moved on from Gregory Rousseau. You know, that was kind of popular for a while, but it's typically between those three. I think I saw one where Jason Owo was edge two or something, but there's no agreement over who the top edge is.
When you look at like what positions are weak, like who are you just slap out of luck with if you need a certain position this year, at least from the looks of it, in like day one, day two, who is it, tight end? Well, outside of Kyle Pitts, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, what is it?
Yeah. If you're not drafting in like the top seven and you need a tight end, that's going to be tough for sure. Tight end is difficult. The middle tier of tight end is a little bit more populous than I thought. You know, there's like people are kind of split on like Pat Freiermuth, but he's largely, you know, tight end too. But after that, there's a fair amount of disagreement, like Brevin Jordan or Tommy Tremble, which is just like an elite name. Hunter Long. There's a couple of tight ends in this group where no one is really consistently ranked tight end 3, 4, or 5. And so like in the 90s or so, you know, you probably can find some decent tight end stuff. But yeah, I think for the most part, that's not a super strong position. And then the one I think everybody knows and talks about is defensive tackle, where it's virtually nothing. Like Christian Barmore, who started out the draft season as potentially, you know, you could pick him at 13 or 14 or something like that. Now we don't even know if he's going to break the first round. Right now he's 25th on the big board. As I add more boards, I expect that to actually rise just a little bit, but you know, late 20s. And then after that, it's kind of pick your flavor. Like, do you feel so strongly about Carlos Basham you can kick him inside? That's really kind of one of the only ways you can get, you know, more depth in this defensive tackle group. Otherwise, it's the Washington guy, Levi Onwuzurike, maybe Milton Williams, who's a, you know, a small school kid with just nuts numbers. Davion Nixon, I think he's kind of an acquired taste. You kind of have to like his play style. But, you know, he lines up at 3 technique, plays like a really phenomenal nose tackle. You kind of have to decide what you want to do with him. So some people have him kind of high. A couple of people have him defensive tackle 1. Some people have him kind of low. But this is not a particularly great defensive tackle group, at least by the consensus board.
You mentioned Christian Barmore, though, the defensive tackle out of Alabama, and I'm here on Vikings.com, and they've got this mock roundup, which, by the way, you're on there, and we're going to talk about your selection for the Vikings a little bit later, and not to get that whole topic away, but our friend Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus, April 12th, selected Christian Barmore at 14 to the Vikings, and I've seen other people say that like he's rising again, so it's kind of been like a roller coaster for him. Do you expect that to play out in the data over the next week? Do you think he's gaining steam, or what is this?
It's weird. So when the initial kind of media reports on what the NFL thinks about, you know, players came out, like, so when Bob McGinn published his, which is just really excellent stuff, you can find that at The Athletic, but when Bob McGinn published his, like, what I'm hearing from scouts and the top 30 offensive players and defensive players, they were pretty down on Christian Barmore. And for the next month, you saw Barmore, you know, slide from a top 15 pick to potentially even leeching out of the first round entirely, but kind of being a 25th overall type guy. And then the last couple of days, we've seen, hey, man, I don't know why the media is so down on Christian Barmore. The NFL is huge on this guy. They love this guy. They love him way more than media does.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I track this for a living. You got to stop doing this.
So that it's the fascinating case of Christian Barmore. We'll see what happens with that. Before we get over to the Vikings, I kind of tease a little bit, but let's get outside of day one. Day two, let's get into some fringe guys, maybe, because as you look at Dane Brugler's top 100 board, this is a piece you just put up on the Athletic as well. What you were kind of digging for were, based on their athletic profile, their testing, some potential steals outside of like that top 100 board of Dane's. Who'd you find?
Yeah, I love doing this every year. So I looked at kind of the historical data for like what workouts correlate to performance at the NFL level. And I found that if you select athletes at positions where they did well in those workouts, you're generally like you're 3 times as likely to find a Pro Bowler. You're generally a little bit more likely to find a guy who's going to work his way onto the roster as a starter. It seems like the NFL undervalues particular types of athletes. So I love doing this every year. At receiver, it was kind of hard to find. I know that the Vikings were probably going to want a mid-tier receiver, so I paid a little bit of attention to that. But there's a couple of jump ball guys in this class, like Tariq Black and Brennan Eagles from Texas had really good workouts. Mike Strawn from University of Charleston, I have no idea. He could be a guy that I could see going in the third round. I mean, his workouts were just insanely good. Or he could drop all the way to the sixth round. I don't know. But, you know, he's somebody to pay attention to. Seth Williams from Auburn. I like him just because he led Auburn in receiving, despite the fact that they literally had an Olympic sprinter as their other guy. that always kind of intrigues me.
Yeah.
I think the Wisconsin Whitewater guy, Quinn Miners, at center, super athlete. So you don't get to qualify him as a guy outside because he was like 56th on Brugler's board, but he's all over the place. But his workouts were just phenomenal. I mean, his workouts were good for tackles, right? Like he was really good. I think other people kind of on the offensive line that are kind of interesting, Drew Dahlman from Stanford, which the only person I've ever seen talk about him is Brandon Thorne. And Thorne loves this dude. Like, he's kind of a zone only guy. You don't really want him to be base blocking all that much as a run blocker, but you know, he can move. Like, he worked out well enough that I actually decided to leave a spreadsheet and watch some actual football. And that guy is fun to watch, man. I like him. Ben Cleveland is interesting because he weighed 343 pounds at his pro day. He's inside a lot of people's top 100. He's not inside Brugler's. And when you watch him play, he seems like he's better fit for teams that are going to run more inside zone than outside zone or gap runs. He doesn't look like he's a guy that you want running to the sideline. But he tested like a guy that could potentially fit within that scheme. So that's somebody to kind of keep an eye on. Dan Moore Jr. from Texas A&M, Jalen Moore from Western Michigan. Those are all guys to pay attention to. And then the defensive guys, the linebackers I kind of like. Monty Rice from Georgia tested really well. He played through a couple of injuries this year. But I really liked what I saw. And then Betts gave him the stamp of approval. So I have to like him.
Yeah.
And then Illinois has a super athlete at linebacker, Milo Eifler, that I kind of like too. So, I mean, there's like 40, 50 people named in this piece, but I think that there's a couple of interesting stories and names. Even an international player, Aaron Doncor, who played like four games for Arkansas State. He's originally from Germany, tested through the roof, had like this nuts three cone time and like a 39 inch vertical or something like that, you know, which like for a guy that's like 250 pounds, it's always going to catch my attention.
Yeah. Who's the guy? I remember now the German wide receiver that the Vikings drafted. What was
Moritz
his name?
Boehringer.
Moritz Boehringer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
That was great. Weaknesses. Doesn't know anything about playbooks. We'll have to translate it into another language. Strengths jumps real high.
I love it. So that's covered. When we come back here on the SB Nation NFL show, we'll get into some Vikings talk and what they could possibly do at pick 14. I'll see if I can pick a fight with Arif. That's coming up next, right after this.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we are back here on the SB Nation NFL show. Michael Kist with Arif Hasan of The Athletic Minnesota. I promised Vikings fans that we would talk about some Vikings. That's what we are going to do. And like I mentioned before, Arif, I'm here on Vikings.com, and I'm getting their roundup, essentially. So they're going around saying what big media says. They're also, for some reason, throwing you on the site to see what you said. What did you have to – what did you pick for the Vikings? What was your reasoning behind it? What was the context behind it? Like, what dominoes had to fall?
First, I just want to say that bribe did not cost that much to get in that roundup. I've done so many mock drafts in the past couple of weeks. I actually don't know which one of mine ended up in that roundup.
Let me tell you. It was Elijah Vera Tucker, the guard/tackle at Southern California.
Oh, so okay.
Something had to happen there for that to be the pick, right?
I mean, well, frankly, he's a good player. I mean, that helps. But yeah, I mean, that one was one where... part of it was motivated just I wanted to do something different. So it's not – there was not a pure motivation to find the best possible player for the Vikings in that mock. So that's part of it.
You're covering your bases. Like if they draft me, like, yeah, I mocked them to them. But meanwhile, you mock like 31 people there.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, because like the last piece I wrote was like, hey, what happens if you don't draft an offensive lineman for the Vikings in the first round? Like, can they still come away with like a decent offensive line? And that was my, and I did like four mock drafts in a piece where I was like, this is what it might look like. And so I had just done four mock drafts without an offensive lineman. So I go into this one thinking, you know, I should think
you're
about
obligated.
It. Otherwise, it's like the same story again, right? I don't want to write the same thing again. I decided the whole point of this piece was to try and find, players that fit the Vikings kind of historical threshold. So, I went through, the history of the Vikings under Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman. And I looked at, you know, what are the workout thresholds? You know, what do they look for in players at each position? And I eliminated a bunch of players. I ended up with a big board about, of 100 players throughout the draft. So I turned 300 players into 100, and I only allowed myself to draft from that board, except once I needed to draft a corner and I just ran out. So I got a guy who like missed the threshold by half an inch on the vertical, and I was like, you know what, if they're so desperate at corner now, it doesn't matter, I'll grab them. But this one, the guys that all fit for pick 14, they were all, I was using a simulator to do this, and they were all picked. And I was like, I just did like eight mocks where I traded out of the pick. I'm just going to pick at 14 now. I don't care. And the only guy within range was Elijah Vera Tucker. And he's, frank, I mean, he's a great player, right? Like, he wouldn't end up at 14 as a guard prospect if he wasn't fun to watch and if he wasn't a good player. But yeah, I have to confess, I had a bunch of ulterior motives picking this guy.
And that happens so much with mock drafts, because I've done them before, right? And you get to the point where you've done 40, 50 of the freaking things, plus whatever you put on Twitter, because you're playing around with you know, the TDN simulator, the PFF simulator.
Yeah, I picked Trevor Lawrence, and I was like, well, I can't write a piece around that, so I'll just tweet that out. Yeah.
Who are the guys? Let's dial it on that. Who are the guys when you look at the offensive linemen that fit the Vikings mold and draft history, and guys that could potentially be there that fit that mold?
Yeah, they love movers, which makes sense, kind of given their scheme. You know, the Kubiak style running scheme that they have. They love these athletic guys, and that creates kind of a problem because it is a fairly deep draft for offensive linemen. But when you look, like if the Vikings trade into the second round, there's not a ton of guys that fit that mold. So people that historically have done fairly well in the 20-yard split, so the first 20 yards of the 40-yard dash, that have got a broad jump of it, like at least 100 inches, that seems to be kind of the cutoff that they use. There's a bunch of guys like that in the draft, but they're all like in the first round or the third round. And so if you kind of move around and you try to play the board a little bit, you're kind of left with like, you have to pick between like a Jalen Mayfield or somebody who didn't work out, like Wyatt Davis or whatever. And it becomes kind of tough. So you kind of have to maneuver to try and see like, well, maybe Brady Christensen will go in the second round. He's another guy that, you know, based on the consensus big board, he's actually really polarizing. Some people have him kind of in the 50s, mm-hmm. right? Some people have him like at like 100. They're like, you know, I'm sick and tired of 26-year-old offensive linemen. I saw Danny Watkins, I'm out, right?
I'd be like, out, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean it's kind of interesting, but Christensen had a really phenomenal workout, you know, just from a pure film perspective, he's great. So you know, that's the kind of guy that sometimes they'll take a look at, and they've kind of indicated that when it comes to offensive linemen, they don't care that much about age. I mean, Garrett Bradbury was one of the oldest offensive line prospects of last year's draft or 2 years ago, and they were perfectly fine selecting him. So you know, it's, there's a bunch of super athletes, I think, for the offensive line this year. A lot of them are in the 30, 40 range. So Samuel Cosmi, for example, tested, you know, kind of out of this world. I think he's one of the best testers we've seen in the last couple of years. It's like Tristan Wirfs, Samuel Cosmi, Mekhi Becton, like just nuts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Wirfs is like also just like a really good player.
Yeah.
that's a good difference between the two of them. But yeah, I mean, those kinds of guys are the kinds of guys you'd expect. And if you take a look at their history at tackle, Brian O'Neill was one of the top athletes at tackle in his class. Ezra Cleveland was one of the top athletes at tackle in last year's class. And last year's class was also an insanely athletic class. Like these two classes of tackles are, you know, a wide zone offensive line coach's wet dream. These guys can friggin' move. Like a lot of these guys like could be tight ends, honestly, if they just dropped 20 pounds.
Let's talk about something. Let's go chaos theory here, because, you know, as we cover teams, and I covered the Eagles for a while and I experienced this, and you've covered the Vikings for a while, and I'm sure you have the same type of disassociation effect happening over time, where you can look at it more objectively, and you're rooting sometimes for different things. Maybe you're rooting for something that's going to just get a ton of clicks, right? So what's,
honestly, man, yeah.
Yeah, you're looking for a story, right? I mean, this is the job, guys. Like, this isn't a state secret. We love stories, right? So, like, Carson Wentz got benched. I was like, yeah, finally, some freaking downloads again. So let's talk about the Vikings and what.
I have no comment on that.
What can they do at 14 that will get you the most clicks within somewhat reason, and we'll just make that arbitrary boundary there.
Quarterback. Yeah. I think a quarterback is in the cards. There's like rumors that, you know, like these are like shadows. Like I haven't confirmed this, so these are not my sources, which I don't even have. But like, you know, shadows of a rumor that the Vikings are willing to take a quarterback if they like him enough, which is of course always the qualifier. But you know, if they took like Trey Lance or whatever, that's instant subscriptions to the Athletic for me. Like that, absolutely.
Papa's eating good that night, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my year right there. So yeah, if they take a quarterback, I mean that's it, game over. I've accomplished my goals by doing nothing at all.
Right. It's endless content. It's at least 2 to 3 years worth of content, right? Because he's not going to start right away, and then you get the boost when Cousins is benched, and then you get the boost the next year whenever he was like, "You're going to take the next step" and whatnot, and then you later on down the line you get the boost when like he's Carson Wentz and he's benched, and then he's traded, you get another boost there. Like it's the quarterbacks that you draft are like the gift that just keep on giving, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, especially if there's a guy in the roster that you thought might be able to start, right? Like if there's a quarterback controversy at all, which is, it's dumb, right? When there's a first round pick at quarterback, there's not really a controversy. That guy's going to take over unless it's Aaron Rodgers. That's the only time when it's like, yeah, we can wait on it on Jordan Love. And even then, Jordan Love got clicks, right? Yep. You can't deny that. So, and the fact that he was the third quarterback on that depth chart, delicious, honestly, like incredible.
Tremendous.
Like, who is it? Tim Boyle? Like,
yeah.
He was on, like, Britain's Got Talent, right? He was, like, singing opera.
They were like, he knows the playbook better. But, brother, if your plan as your backup is Tim Boyle, I think it still says a lot about Jordan Love's development and what they think of him.
It was just for that we're fixing his footwork. Come on, man.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, quarterback is gonna draw the most clicks. I think, and that one is gonna be like half the Vikings fans love it. They're sick of Cousins. They don't think he can win anything. The other half of Vikings fans are gonna hate it. They're like, hey, we're in a win now window, and we're not like the Packers. We can't just ignore the draft and start winning. we gotta get some players that can play right now. This guy can't play right now.
Yeah, you
Cousins is like guaranteed for 2 years. So yeah, I mean that one's gonna draw a ton of conversation. Outside of quarterback, I think the funniest move would be to draft another corner in the first round.
That's a Zimmer thing.
Yeah, and it's totally possible now that, like, Jeff Gladney has, like, these allegations hanging over him, super serious allegations, could go to jail, right?
Right.
It's pretty, and it wouldn't before that, it wouldn't have taken a ton for the Vikings to talk themselves into a corner. They've got three corners on the roster who are scheduled to be free agents next year. And so, which is the whole reason they drafted Mike Hughes way back. They had three cornerbacks set to be free agents the next year. And Vikings fans were like, hey, man, I know you love defense and corners, but, you know, you're out of offense. You run out. You don't have offensive linemen. You don't have any of them. You have a tight end, right? And the Vikings were like, you can take care of that later. Yeah. And they were lucky enough to draft Brian O'Neill, right, in the second round. But, you know, they drafted a cornerback in the first round, and it got a bunch of people upset. And then he got like a pick six in the fourth game, and Zimmer was like, "Ha, I was right." And then he was bad for the next 3 years.
Right.
The Vikings didn't pick up his fifth year option, so he's one of the three guys scheduled to hit free agency. So they could very much, you take a look at a guy like Patrick Surtain, and he's a Zimmer guy, right? I have to imagine Zimmer's like, I don't care who I have on the roster. That guy is amazing. I'll figure it out. I'll put him on the field. It doesn't matter. So I could totally see a cornerback being drafted and Vikings fans just like, they don't even have a pick in the second round. What are they going to do? How are we going to find an offensive lineman? And the Vikings just be like, well, we've managed this long. We'll do it again.
resource allocation. 10
years without an offensive line.
Right. I mean, I remember the same conversations going into the draft with Bradbury and all of that. It just seems like a repeat of that whole conversation, and like resource allocation in the draft and with the cap and free agency, it's a zero sum game, right? If you don't draft that offensive lineman, chances are you're not getting one, and they're hard to find in the NFL. Yeah. You're not just going to trade for a backup and have them be good. Backups kind of stink in the NFL. That's the way it is. Arif, thank you so much for joining us here on the SB Nation NFL show. Go ahead, man. Plug yourself, plug your work, what you got coming out, what came out, whatever you want to plug, man. Fire away.
Yeah, if you want to get involved in a stupid Twitter fight, I'm super game. I get involved in stupid Twitter fights all the time. So, you can find me at Arif Hasan, NFL, Arif Hasan, NFL. That's on Twitter. I don't have really any other social media that I use, so that's how brain poisoned I am. Or you can, you read my good content, which is over at The Athletic. And I get credit whenever you subscribe via one of my stories. So actually, instead of heading to theathletic.com, head to theathletic.com/author/Arif-Hasan, click on one of those stories and give me money. I'd love that. But the consensus big board is coming up. That I think is a really fun project to do every year, a bunch of data on who the top 300 players in the draft might be, and a bunch of conclusions draw from that. And like I said, I just published a piece on, I outlined 40 players that had really great pro days that are players that we're just not talking about because they're outside of the top 100. So that one is a super fun piece. So check that out.
I hope they don't draft a quarterback. I hope it's a ramen noodle year for your brother. No offense. Thank you for joining me, man.
All right. Well, yeah, I hope they draft 8 quarterbacks for you, dude. One for every round, and then one extra one, like a compensatory.
And here comes the music to take us out.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.